All right. I asked Brother David, I said, can I preach from the floor this afternoon? And he said, well, you're so small, I don't know if anybody will be able to see you. No, he didn't say that at all. I appreciate accommodating me in this. You know, there's just something different about being down here on the floor. There just really is. And when I preach, I love to connect with the audience. And sometimes you can do that a little bit better when you can be with the folks. So I appreciate that. Thank you for your comments after today's two lessons so far. I know it's a lot. I do know it's a lot. And I appreciate working with David and your leadership. A desire to have a digital parenting seminar, a technology seminar. I believe that this is crucial. If it's not me, somebody who has researched this subject matter, because it needs to be discussed. It's got to be brought to the surface within our homes and our congregations. And part of that's just because technology's not leaving. And so we've got to know how to address it and respond to it in a manner that is pleasing and honoring to God. And I appreciate what some of you said. Some of you are educators, and you told me that, you know, you're seeing this in your schools. And a lot of the assignments, even with very, very young children, are involving technology. Others have said, you know, that AI, they would agree that AI is going to fundamentally change the subject of technology. And it's not that the same basic human needs and desires and struggles aren't going to be what we're talking about. But imagine a world, and we're already here, where instead of getting on a computer screen in your room and watching something, you put on goggles that you are immersed in a full-blown, everywhere you look, it's all around you. Your room has disappeared, and you are in that virtual world. That's where we are. And so the question is, how are we as parents and grandparents and the Lord's church going to respond to this? Well, the first couple lessons that you heard today in this six lesson set, you heard lesson 2 and 3 with another one kind of thrown in there at the end, as I was asked to cover some things that we could utilize to help shore up our home. But we address in this series, I address a lot of things pertaining to, you've got to decide what kind of home you're going to have. There is no way around that. And in that, I talk about those three words that I've kept bringing up: intentional, deliberate, and purposed. Because when you look throughout the Bible, what you'll find out is Jesus knew why he came to this earth. As a matter of fact, 5 times in the book of Matthew, you will read that the Son of Man came, and it gives a reason why the Son of Man came. And you look at that and do that study. I'm not going to shortchange you and your blessing of studying Matthew from that perspective. But what you'll discover is Jesus Christ himself is our example on living and being intentional, deliberate, and purposeful. John the Baptist was deliberate, intentional, and purposeful. You look at the old prophets in the Old Testament, and you're going to find they were deliberate, intentional, and purposeful. And I firmly believe that's a major aspect of the call within the home in the New Testament. Along with that, you've heard me talk about the modeling that parents are supposed to do before their children. That gets down to, how are you leading, not just responding, but how are you leading when it comes to digital technology? And you look at the idea of modeling. The Apostle Paul, 1 Corinthians chapter 11, imitate me as I also imitate Christ. He called the Corinthian church to basically follow his lead. Jesus Christ himself would do that with the apostles there in John chapter 13. As I have done to you, do unto others, or do to one another. The idea of the foot washing, right? And the idea behind that was, look, I am your model. I have shown you what to do. Now do. And that's where this really kind of leaves parenting, at least in the traditional sense. And we as adults have to evaluate how we are doing with our technological habits. Am I on the phone too much? Am I, on the TV too much? Am I, every time I have a conversation with somebody, am I constantly going back to, I need to get on the phone to check something? My phone beeps right? Because I got a message or it plays a little tune. Well, what's the response within me? Am I okay leaving a message unchecked? Or do I respond to it promptly like Pavlov's dog, right? You've heard of that one in psychology, the dog that salivates when the food is not there, but the bell rings. There's a lot that goes into this, but in this lesson, what I would like for us to do is to consider the impact. This is one of those things. The first two were, okay, we're connected. We were made to connect, but when you overconnect, it can be bad. The second lesson was, we need to shore it up because we got to be careful. There's some bad players out there. But this lesson said it's not about the filter. It's about the impact that technology has on all of us. And if we can be aware of this, then we can understand the urgency of it, but we can also then begin to set boundaries and good guidelines when it comes to using this. And I had read Psalm 55 before this, and the reason I did is because it opens up the discussion of the emotional well-being of individuals when stress is a part of their life. And of course, some of you have your heading there. You know that King David was, it seems like for at least a good portion of his life recorded in the scripture, he was chased by Saul, by those who would want to overthrow him, or by those who would align with his son in trying to claim ownership of the kingdom. And he lived a lot of his life on the run. And you'd look at that and you'd go, why? King David, I mean, was he that bad of a guy? Well, he was an adulterer. He was a murderer. It's not like he was squeaky clean, but the reality was he was God's anointed. And that just tells me God can use imperfect people when they present themselves to him is what that tells me. But here's what's interesting. When you read Psalm 55, what you get is a glimpse into probably some things that you've gone through before when you didn't know when the end was going to come of the difficulty, or you never knew where the next attack was going to come from. It says, Psalm 55, 1, give ear to my prayer, O God, and do not hide yourself from my supplication. In other words, God, I need you. Give heed to me and answer me. I'm restless in my complaint, and I am surely distracted. Listen to the description. Restless, distracted. Because of the voice of the enemy, because of the pressure of the wicked. For they bring down trouble upon me, and in anger they bear a grudge against me. My heart is in anguish within me, and the terrors of death have fallen upon me. Fear and trembling come upon me, and horror has overwhelmed me. I said, oh, that I had wings like a dove, I would fly away and be at rest. I stopped there on purpose. And here's why I stopped there. Because what we do learn about the human psyche in just that one brief text, and there are other places you could go, that's just one. It's man's desire to escape that which overwhelms them. Man's desire to say, I can't take it anymore. I don't know where the next attack is coming from. I know the enemy wants to come after me, but I don't know, you know, where the next punch is going to come from. If I could just fly away and get rid of it all, I would. Now, here's why that's significant. Imagine living in a world that you never get to turn off the potential damages. Imagine living in a world that you're always curious what somebody's going to say about you. You're always wondering what you're missing out on. You're always curious who took an unflattering picture of you and posted it and then drew attention to it in the comment, and they wanted their friends to laugh about it at your expense. Now, if I could tell you, imagine that world, but then imagine at least at night you could turn it off and they wouldn't turn it back on until the next day. That would be a fictitious world because the internet never sleeps. You know what was great about growing up in a day and age without the internet and kids? It is what it is, and I don't want to apologize for it. I just understand how good we had it. You know, at school, we had people who would say bad things about us. Can you believe people at times would say bad things about me? I find that very difficult to believe, you know. But they would, and kids don't like to be made fun of. There's three great fears that they have: isolation, to be made fun of, and to be thought that they're not grown up enough. They don't want to be the end of all the jokes, and they don't want to be left out. And you want to know why it is at times parents and children have disagreements and issues? It's not that you're a horrible parent and they're a horrible kid. The reality is they want you to think they're more grown up than they are and that they're capable of handling the responsibilities. The problem is you as an adult, you're going, I know you're not grown up enough, but somehow we've got to have this relationship where you trust that I know more than you think I know. And that I got to be okay with, okay, I got to give him a little bit so that maybe he's not going to handle it the best. But you know, that's all part of the growing up process. And so then I don't let them hurt themselves or get wrapped up in sin, but maybe I let them make a decision that, you know, what'd you learn from that kind of thing, right? Now, all that to say this, you and I, when we were growing up, that happened in school. If there was an issue, there was a bicycle rack. You understand what I'm saying? And when it was over at the bicycle rack, guess what? We went home and we were buddies. We were probably playing wiffle ball or baseball again at the end of the day, or tackle football back in the days when parents let kids play tackle football with no pads. But the reality is you didn't have to worry what was everybody doing and saying and posting about you when you slept. The reality is today they never get to turn it off. And it's been described by police officers, law enforcement officers who have researched this and done studies and seminars on it from a law enforcement standpoint. They said, imagine a world where there are no laws, there are no policemen, and anything goes. That's the world of the internet. Now, I've not told you anything you didn't know, but what I do need you to know is this. Your children, your grandchildren, my children, they are like sponges. And the neat thing about a sponge is that it has the ability to soak up whatever environment it is in. So if you put a sponge in a bucket of soapy water to wash a vehicle, it's going to soak up the soapy water. But if you put a sponge in a puddle of oil, it's going to try to soak up that puddle of oil too. It depends on what you put it in. If you put it in sewer water, what's it going to soak up? Sewer water. If you put it in pure water, purified distilled water, what's it going to soak up? Purified distilled water. Now here's the problem. A sponge does not exist in this illustration in isolation. So in reality, they're in different puddles. They're in this puddle, maybe on Sundays. They're in that puddle, maybe when they go to school. They're in that puddle when they go to the locker room because they're involved with sports. They're in that puddle when they're around their peers on Friday and Saturday nights. And you would look at that and you'd say, yeah, but the goal is for them only to soak up the purified distilled water of a Sunday. Well, the problem is your children and mine, your grandchildren, don't exist in bubbles. And so to some extent, their sponge is a mixture of all these different puddles. Now, the reason I throw that out is because one of the biggest puddles that sponge is in is social media. And in the world of social media, what we're discovering, and those discoveries are still coming out, are that there's a lot of pressure, a lot of anxiety that comes. Today, we're going to deal with three subjects, and then the lesson is yours. And if you want to talk afterwards, we can. We're going to deal with anxiety, addiction, and online reputation. Three areas that seem to always rise to the top when it comes to the impact of digital technology. And in that, dealing with anxiety, and I thought it was interesting in looking at a dictionary definition. The definition is simply this. It's an abnormal and overwhelming sense of apprehension and fear, often marked by physical signs such as tension, sweating, and increased pulse rate. By doubt concerning the reality and nature of the threat, and by self-doubt by one's capacity to cope with it. Now here's the deal. All of us to an extent deal with anxiety and fear. They're totally normal responses to life. And by that I mean this. There are going to be things you encounter that are going to bring fear to your life. And there are going to be times where maybe you anticipate that thing that you don't know. And it's going to be the fear of the unknown. Have you ever heard that phrase used before? That's going to kind of cause you to have to deal with it. Now the difference between those who get wrapped up in anxiety and those who just deal with fear in a healthy manner, it's been described this way, and I thought it was a great explanation. Imagine yourself walking down a trail in the woods and you come across, we have copperheads. I don't know what y'all have down here. What'd you say? Rattler snake or whatever, rattlesnake, coral snakes, very poisonous snake, right? And that snake, you find yourself as you walk through that trail, you come upon it and it's right there between your feet. Now the dilemma is, what do you do? Some of you say, you run. Some of you say, you start stomping and kick it, right? And then there's one person in this room, probably a junior high kid, who says, you reach down and see if you can grab it, right? I don't use junior high kids as my illustrations anymore. They always ruin my illustrations. So anyhow, the idea is this. The person who deals with fear in a healthy way is either going to turn to fighting or running. It's called the fight or flight syndrome. That's the way people deal with fear. People who have anxiety, they come across that snake and they don't know what to do, so they just stand there. That's the state of anxiety. Now, you and I might look at that and go, that doesn't make sense. And that's part of what the person with anxiety would tell you. I want to run or I want to fight, but I can't move. And you would look at that and you'd say, if you would just help yourself, then you would get over this. Well, that's a person who's saying that who's never dealt with, or at least not in that moment, dealing with anxiety. Because when you have anxiety, you can't just be told, get over it, and you get over it. Can you imagine that conversation? Well, just get over it. Oh, is that the secret? Is that how you do it? You mean I'm to just get over it? Don't you think if a person who had anxiety could get over it like that, they would have by now? Do you really think they enjoy standing there over the snake? You see, when it comes to technology, it creates an atmosphere where anxiety is persistent. And by that, I want you to think about the stressors that young people report in their life. 61% of teenagers today, they say this, they feel a lot of pressure to get good grades. And some of you are going, where's the other 39%? But 61%, they have a lot of pressure. 29% feel a lot of pressure to look good. 28% feel a pressure to fit in socially. And 21% feel pressure to be involved in extracurricular activities to be good at sports. Now, you would look at that and go, is it really pressure? You know, I'm an adult. And that's where we've got to back up to part of this series that we just didn't get to dive into enough. And that is the difference between the adult brain and the adolescent brain. Because the adult brain will process things differently. It'll process pressures differently. It'll process stimuli differently. The adolescent brain, you know, I have a joke when I talk with teens, and I talk about puberty in the sense of Dr. Evil pituitary gland kicks in and it's all over. There are changes taking place that they can't even explain. Smells that are happening that they can't even explain. Sweats that are occurring when it used to not. And all of a sudden now I'm attracted to a person from the opposite sex. And, you know, before we used to play tag and push each other around. Now, hey, you know, he's kind of cute. She's kind of cute. And I don't know why all these changes are happening. Well, guess what? They're not going to respond the same way that an adult brain's going to respond. So with all the pressures that are already there, I think it's quite interesting. When it comes to social media, 45% of those who were polled feel overwhelmed by all the drama on social media. 26% responded that social media made them feel worse about their own lives. 43% feel pressure to post content that makes them look good. And 37% feel pressure to share things that will get likes and comments. Now, a lot of you kids, you probably don't know this, and if you don't, it's okay, but there used to exist a time in social media where likes and comments were not part of it. You would just post, and there wasn't this idea of liking a comment, resharing anything. Can you imagine early days of social media that we didn't have that? Well, now that's kind of a gauge on, am I being influential or not? And thus you have even the concept being born in our culture of influencers who are big money makers. It's all about the likes, the shares, the views. Well, another concept that gets thrown out when it comes to the way kids feel about social media is what's called FOMO. You've heard of this. I know you have. I didn't make this up. Fear of missing out. And I think it's quite interesting when you really start looking at the definition there that by the World Journal of Clinical Cases, it says the concept of FOMO explores the fear of social exclusion. Through social media, there is continuous awareness of what an individual may be missing in terms of a good time, which researchers phrases as it creates distorted perceptions of edited lives of others. In other words, I'm missing out on what this person is having a great time doing. The problem is that person only presented a picture of what was fake and they wanted you to see. That's why, to me, the social media app called Be Real, I know some of you have heard that. To me, it's ridiculous. I call it Be Fake. There's only a couple times I've actually seen it in real. You know why? Because usually when people put themselves in the picture, they're smiling. And I want you just to pause for a second. Do you smile 24 hours a day? You don't. And what's great about it is this. When I see teenagers taking their Be Real or something along those lines, I'll see them flip their hair or get in a group or fix their clothes up. And you look at that and you go, it's because it's a picture. Everybody wants to look good in a picture. And what I offer to you is this. There's nothing wrong with that. But don't sell it as being authentic. In other words, where's the picture when you first wake up and your hair's all messed up and you haven't brushed your teeth yet? Where's that experience? You know why you're never going to see that? Because that doesn't get likes and views and shares. Although I will tell you this, it would get a lot of views. You should see me in the morning with my hair. It's awful. Now, all that to say this, if that mind is processing things differently, then you and I should not be surprised that we see quotes like this. I pretty much just post stuff that makes me look good and makes me look like my ideal self. That's a 16-year-old boy. Or this young lady, Grace, the age of 13, who under the same concept would refer to the idea of the struggles. I felt like I was the only one not there when reflecting on all the pictures that were taken and posted. I was thinking they're having a good time without me. Then I just really, really felt bad about myself or felt really, really bad about myself. Now what's interesting is why should Grace feel bad about herself? Should I feel bad that other people are having a good time? And the answer is that's not why she felt bad. She felt bad because her internal conversation was this. Why did they leave me out? Why was I not worth inviting? And then all of a sudden it's a downward spiral. Now when you and I consider this idea of anxiety, I want you to think about the signs and whether or not you see these at times within your child. I'm going to go ahead and show you all four of them, because it's easier than me clicking each one individually and having to keep up with it. I want you to think about these four areas when it comes to what psychologists, what counselors will say are indicative of anxiety, especially even as it relates to social media. Number one are emotional signs. And this is what they say regarding emotional signs. They don't get excited often. You're thinking, that's just a teenager. No, this is something that's unusual to your teen. Don't get excited often, unhappy, may seem depressed, seem agitated, anxious, aloof, and irritable. They get angry and overwhelmed easily by simple things and may also feel helpless and hopeless about the situation. The next time your teenager snaps at you for no reason, you could know that he is stressed. And I say to that psychologist, no, duh. Of course teenagers are stressed. I don't want to ask you to raise your hand if you're not stressed, but there's probably only a few of you who would do that, and you're probably retired and getting to fish every day. That's the only, and then the only thing I know you might be stressed about is, you know, the bait and whether the fish are biting. No, that's not true either. Because I've talked with plenty of individuals who are older, and stress just changes as you age. Stress is there at the young, stress is there at the old. In other words, It's going to be present. It is the snake that you will come upon. The question is, how do you respond to it? Physical signs of anxiety include tiredness or fatigue, headaches, constipation, nausea and dizziness, palpitations, loss of appetite. Your teen may lose interest in sports and other physical activities as well. And some teens may lose or gain weight, while girls may experience a change in their period cycle. All of those are things that you have got to be in tune with as a parent, just to say, hey, any sudden change or any change that I see in my child ought to be a flag that goes off where I ask what's going on. Behavioral changes, fidgety, display nervous habits like nail biting, restless pacing, moving around constantly and so on. Crying, isolating self from friends and family, being moody or easily irritable, not bothered about their appearance and not showing as much interest in activities that give them pleasure could also indicate stress. And the last one, cognitive symptoms. Stress in teens can also impact their cognitive abilities like memory. You may think that your teen is neglecting his chores or being careless, but for all you know, he may have been stressed and forgot about it. Other cognitive symptoms include being irrational, the inability to focus, negative perspectives, and poor judgment. Now, look, here's the deal. Sometimes we can diagnose this thing to death, and I'll be upfront about that, because sometimes kids don't fail to do their chores because they were stressed. They fail to do their chores because they didn't want to do them. And that's where you've got to be engaged in this. But here's where I also am okay having a little understanding. And this is some things that I've learned in my time when I was living at home at a children's home in Middle Tennessee. And I'm not saying that all the kids who are in that boat, you know, are going to express it in the same way and that your kids are going to express it in the same way as those kids that were in the home. But here's what I discovered. Kids oftentimes have an underlying reason why they may not be able to express it. Sometimes it's pride. Sometimes it's rebellion. Sometimes it's stress, and I am stressed in so many other areas, and now I'm stressed here, and I just can't handle it. Well, guess what? That happens in marriages at times too. A husband who has a rough day at work comes home and he's short with his wife. Why was he short with his wife? What did she do? Nothing. He had a rough day at work. He just didn't come home and say, hey, I've had a rough day at work. Watch out, I'm going to be short with you. You see, we do that as adults too. We mishandle stressors. The issue is not whether you handle it correctly or not, at least at this point. It's to recognize whether it exists. And here's what the records are showing, the reports, that kids who spend more time with technology exhibit higher levels of stress, higher levels of anxiety. Kids who especially are on social media more and have higher levels of anxiety, but get this, the records are saying the same about adults, and specifically, and don't throw tomatoes, I'm leaving after this, specifically women. If you're feeling, ladies, high levels of stress and depression, get off of social media for 2 weeks. And here's why. Your dopamine in your brain will reset. Dopamine is your reward chemical. It's why you have to hurry up and check when your phone goes off. It's why it makes you feel good when someone likes a post or shares a post. It's why when someone leaves a positive comment, you like that comment. And you look at that and you say, well, no, Joe, it's just women like to be complimented. And yes, they do. Yes, and that's okay. Men like to be respected and to be shown worth too. That's not the issue. The issue is the release of dopamine. And if you've trained your body to release dopamine at every like or share, then that is not healthy. So take a step back. Drop the Instagram. Delete the app. You can put it back on your phone in 2 weeks. Delete whatever app it is and go 2 weeks just only being able to check it on your tablet or your computer. And you will find a change in your disposition. Guess what? Teenagers, I lovingly tell you, that will happen with you too. One of the greatest things you can do for your self-worth is from time to time delete the social media apps, unplug, give your brain a chance to reset, and then get back on if that's what you feel you need to do. Now look, that's not the only thing though that comes into play with dopamine. Because when it comes to this issue of reward centers, that's why addiction and technology becomes such a significant discussion among psychologists, because what will happen is they'll say, well, obviously kids can become addicted not just to social media, but they can become addicted to other things as well. And that's true. Do you know that over 90% of children and teenagers in the United States now play video games? That shouldn't surprise you. You see it on your own. They spend, and majority spend, substantial amounts of time playing them. We're talking like somewhere in the category of 5 hours a day, 4 to 5 hours a day. Now, when you look that up, 4 to 5 hours a day over a typical, 5 day work week, 6 day work week, how many hours is that? If they're spending round numbers, I do well with round numbers. Five. Let's go with five because I know it's either going to end in five or zero, right? If they spend 5 hours a day on video games, how many hours in a week is that? 35 hours. 35 hours. It's almost a full-time job. And we look at that and we would say, are there reasons why young people may struggle then with certain areas? Yeah, there are. Verizon, a U.S.-based telecommunication provider, reported a 75% increase in online gaming activities that coincided with the stay-at-home initiative directives during COVID. Let me rephrase that. When kids were forced to stay home and go online, video game usage went up 75%, according to Verizon. Even so much so that internet gaming disorder was actually something that the World Health Organization brought into being, and it's actually diagnosable today as a classifiable disease. And they'll classify internet gaming disorder. Does it get in the way of other activities? Gaming continues despite negative consequences occurring and impairment in personal, family, social, educational, occupational, or other important areas of life. And is that all evident for 12 months? So in other words, you're like, my kid's on this kick, and this week, you know, I told him to do something and he didn't do it because of a video game. That's not internet gaming disorder. That's a kid who probably needs a video game taken away for a day or two as a consequence of disobeying, right? Now, here's the deal. Internet gaming disorder is, are you seeing lasting effects of it getting in the way of things? And some of us are like, getting in the way of things, what do you mean? My child's going to get a college scholarship based upon gaming. Now, look, I got to say this, and you know I recruit for Fried Hardeman. Do you know that your children can get scholarships today based upon how well they game? That Fried Hardeman, as of this year, has what's called an EA Sports team that gives away money, and the kids go play video games against other schools and colleges. Do you know we're not the only one who's doing that? That's a big deal amongst Division I schools. It's a big deal amongst other private Christian universities. Now, here's my thing. I only regret they didn't give away scholarships for Pong when I was there, or the first original Super Mario Brothers, or King Kong, or Pac-Man. I would have done really well. Now, you say, Joe, come on. Are you saying then that they shouldn't do that? Are you... Fried Hardeman is doing it. It's just a sign of the times is all it is. And some individuals who look at that, they'll say there's actually benefit to gaming. And of course, people, when I throw that out, individuals who are already against gaming, they'll go, yeah, but those are the pro gaming studies. And I can show you a study on, you can. Statistics can be manipulated and stories can be told. But here's what they're saying. A lot of the jobs moving forward in America are going to be computer-based jobs. A lot of that's going to require the skills that young people utilize in some way, shape, or form in gaming. So that's why those studies come up and say, see, gaming is healthy. This isn't should my children play video games or not. This is, are they playing video games too much where it is unhealthy? Well, here's what they say. How do I know if there's a problem when it comes to an addiction? There are multiple questions that get brought up. Number one, is there a preoccupation with gaming? Withdrawal symptoms when gaming is taken away are not possible. Those symptoms include sadness, anxiety, and irritability. Is there a tolerance problem? In other words, do they need to spend more time gaming to satisfy the same urge where they used to spend less time gaming? An inability to reduce playing. I want to quit, I just can't. Unsuccessful attempts to quit gaming. Giving up other activities, a loss of interest in previously enjoyed activities due to gaming. Continuing to game despite problems. deceiving family members or others about the amount of time spent on gaming, the use of gaming to relieve negative moods such as guilt or hopelessness, and they risk having jeopardized or lost a job or relationship due to gaming. In other words, it's like, why aren't you hanging out with these friends anymore? I got to play the game. Well, now the friends are no longer coming around and they're no longer calling because the game was more important than the face-to-face interaction. Now, I got to be upfront with you. I'm not the guy who says gaming is evil. I'm not that guy. I do believe it needs to not consume our lives. And I do believe it needs to have some restrictions that are set on what games that need to be enjoyed. That's a personal preference on that one. But here's what you're going to find out. I myself am a gamer. I know. I'm horrible at it. But here's why I do it. I'm a dad who believes you can tell your children to engage you on your interest. And that's okay. Come out here and help me fix this car. That's okay. Come out here and help me lift this golf cart. That's okay. But at times, as parents, you need to engage your children on their interests too. And you remember the days where dads would get a baseball glove and go in the backyard and throw with their sons? You remember that? Men, were you going to play in the major leagues? No, I'll go ahead and help you. Get over that one, right? Why did you go out, you think, and throw the ball with your son in the backyard? It's because you had some of the best talks while in the backyard throwing the baseball. You would talk about things that you would never talk about if you said, son, let's sit down at this table and have a conversation. You know why? Because young men don't do well talking like this. They do well talking like this. In other words, there's a reason you work together, and as you work, you talk. Now, ladies, that's a little different. Ladies feel more comfortable having more of the face-to-face, over-the-phone call, going out with a friend and having a cup of coffee. And that's a little difference in the way our brains are wired. Now, here's why I said that. Because when I game, there's a lot of good conversations that we can have. Or there's a lot of discovering, why'd you do that, or frustrations. And then you can, as a father, you look at that and you go, now that's not the way we're going to handle this. You know, or something along those lines, right? And so, yeah, I'm not very good at it. My kids tell me regularly I'm not very good at it, but I do try to game on a Switch. So it's not even something that's fancy, right? Now, all that to say this, you need to be aware of the addiction that's there. And if you need to step away, you need to step away. I would encourage that. But so you have anxiety and you have addiction. Last but not least, the one I want to cover is this, online reputation. And the reason I do this is because sometimes we look at digital reputation different than real life reputation. In other words, we would say, hey, you better take care of your reputation. A good name. Now, the Bible talks about the value of a good name. And it does. And I would offer this to you. That doesn't change when it comes to online activity. You carry your reputation with you online. The things you like, the things you post, the things you repost all say something about your reputation. And here's what young people need to understand is that those avenues of displaying reputation are being seen by a lot of people. And through what we do online, we can either direct people to the Lord or we can harm the cause of Christ. And we need to be aware of that. In other words, the digital world is not insignificant. It's not neutral. It is where we engage people. It's been called the square of technology or the square of the town. That's why what happens there is significant to what people think about you, but not just you, but what you claim when you claim to be a Christian. Well, how can you claim to be a Christian? I saw you doing this, or I saw you post that. And that's where some of us adults need to back up and take a step too. We're not careful. We're going to turn our online platform into something totally different than we would our in-real person platform. When we talk more about politics than we do Jesus, that tells people who we really are, not just something about us. When we, push one thing over another, you got to understand people are paying attention. And young people, you got to understand people are paying attention. I thought this was quite interesting. Colleges look at your digital footprint, your online reputation. More than 80% of college recruiters and college admission officers use social media in the admissions process. More than 80%. Now you're saying, does Freed Hardeman? I don't know what everybody does who makes decisions, but there are times that I'll look. I want to know who my incoming Bible majors are. I want to know kind of what their interests are. And part of that is this. I want to know kind of their interest, how to talk to them, right? That's a sales thing. I'm giving you an inside scoop. I'm not here to sell, but I am selling. But the idea is this. You also learn a lot about people by what they're involved with online. 80% use social media in the admissions process. Bosses are also looking. 70% of employers use social media to screen candidates before hiring them. 70%. 57% are less likely to interview a candidate that they cannot find online. I thought that was interesting. It's almost a double-edged sword. You're telling me there's a lot that's introduced negative into my life, and then you're telling me that employers will go online, and if they can't find me online, then it's a negative. So in some extent, you can't run from it. You just have to approach it in a God-honoring way. And parents, your kids are going to need you to walk with them through this. 54% have decided not to hire a candidate based on their social media profiles. What are they looking for? This is what was come up in the study. 61% are seeking information that supports an applicant's job qualification. In other words, you tell me you are proficient in an area. I want to go online and see if I can see any reason to believe what you told me was correct. 37% want to know what other people are posting about the candidate. I don't want to know if you think you're a good person. I want to know if everybody else who's posting thinks that you're a good person or a qualified candidate in this field. And 24% of those who do the hiring and the firing, 24% are looking for any reason whatsoever not to hire you. In other words, it's a default. I go looking for reasons not to hire you. Give me a reason. Show me irresponsibility. Show me opinionated to the point that I think you're going to cause problems on my team. And you look at that and you go, no, social media is just for me. And I offer something to you. Nothing that you do publicly is ever just for you. But isn't that the way God intended it in some way, shape, or form? Wasn't it always supposed to be about Him? Wasn't it always supposed to be about advancing the name of Jesus and advancing the cause of Christ? Wasn't it always supposed to be the salt and the light, not just in real life, but online too, whatever interactions we have? It was to be that we don't bring blasphemy to the name of Christ, but that we bring honor and glory to the name of Christ? That's where we've got to understand this next slide. And that is this, our online reputation's like a digital billboard. When people come across our social media pages, what do they see? And so here are three areas that I would offer something to you that parents, you need to help make sure you talk to your kids about this. Number one, you need to teach your children what good conduct is online. Be mindful of how you act online. That's what content is. Remember that a person is on the other side of the screen, not just a name and a profile picture. That's a real person who's going to be reading those comments. That's a real person who's going to be responding to what you posted. And you can't think of them just as a profile picture and a name. You've got to understand that's a person. Number two, the content. Think about what you share. Please think about what you share. Ask yourself, will it embarrass or humiliate me or someone else? I would offer this, will it bring honor and glory to God? And if the answer to that is yes, it will embarrass, and no, it will not bring honor and glory, don't like, don't share, don't repost. You can survive one day without doing that, I promise you. Number three, caring. Be thoughtful and kind. Remember to post with empathy for others. The reality is social media has become a place where people can share, a place where people can express, and that's all the benefits of social media. We need outlets to express ourselves, outlets to express ideas, outlets that you may express ideas that differ than other people, and you can discuss them in a grown-up manner, not in a immature, emotional, yelling manner. You say, how do you yell? All caps. Don't do all caps. If you're doing all caps all the time, don't. You're yelling at everybody, okay? I'm just throwing that out there for your benefit. But the idea is this: you need to remember that you're posting not to win an argument. Your ultimate goal in life, and parents, if it's not your ultimate goal, it will not be your child's ultimate goal when it comes to social media. Your ultimate goal is to bring honor and glory to God and to lead as many people to Jesus Christ as possible. It is not to get a candidate elected. It is not to advance a psychological concept or a team that you're rooting for. And so I would offer this to you. Post with empathy. Post your opinions. I'm not suggesting that. I'm just offering this to you. Don't forget, your goal is not to win the argument. You say, yes, it is. Your goal is to bring honor and glory to God. And when that becomes your everything, your kids will see that. And as they read your post and you are engaged with them in their posting, you're going to raise Christians who know how to use social media in a positive way. Anxiety, addiction, and online reputation. There are others. Either you're going to have to do your own research or get the book when Diane gets it. That's all I can know to say. But anyhow, thank you so much. This evening, obviously, a seminar set's a little different from a regular, I guess, sermon in the afternoon. But y'all have been wonderful in your listening, and I appreciate your acceptance of this information. But we always want to extend the Lord's invitation anytime we gather together, because we never know who's here, who maybe they're at that time that they're ready to make a decision. And so what we want you to understand today is this, that in all these things that we're talking about, with all the anxiety and then what we read from Psalm 55, what's beautiful within all of that is David knew where to go for help. David knew where to go for help. And he knew that the Lord was able to deal with whatever he brought his way. That's why he went to him. And this afternoon, if you're struggling in the areas that we've talked about today with addiction or anxiety or any of these other things, maybe even as a parent, you're like, well, we didn't do any of that. And now, you know, I feel like I've failed my family. Well, here's the deal. The only failure is if you just walk away and don't change anything. That's the only failure. Sometimes we just don't know. But now that you know to pay attention to it, what will you do? See, here's the good news. If you're struggling personally inside of yourself, Jesus is still the answer for your peace. And you can find that, but you got to come to Him and you got to submit to Him and you've got to make it about His way and not your way. And maybe that means obeying the gospel, confessing Jesus as Lord, repenting of your sins, and being immersed for the forgiveness of your sins. But maybe, just maybe, and most likely, in an afternoon service, it's this. You know, I haven't been doing it, this social media technology thing. I haven't even been taking into account what God thinks about this. Maybe that's where you come back to Him and do it His way. You see, part of being a child of God is not just, did I check every box, right? Being a child of God is about this. Is He my everything that drives my life? And when He's my everything that drives my life, then technology will be in that everything. And maybe that's where you are. Maybe there's a recentering of your family on Jesus that needs to be done. I don't know, but what I do know is this. We want to help you if we can. We want to pray with you, pray for you. And of course, I know your shepherds, David, they would love to welcome you, to receive you, to cry with you. Whatever we can do to help, though, we invite you to come forward as together we stand and as we sing.